Iranians take to the streets across the country to condemn desecration of sanctities and acts of vandalism during the recent riots. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi says ongoing crises in West Asia should be resolved domestically through dialogue without any foreign meddling. And the British Finance Minister says the government will limit the right to strike to cases where negotiations have failed as the UK was hit with what was called a summer of discontent. Hello and welcome, everybody. Iranians have taken to the streets across the country to denounce the recent riots in a number of cities. The protests were held following Friday prayers. The demonstrators slammed the desecration of Iranian sanctities as well as acts of vandalism during the riots. The rioters blocked streets and vandalized public property, including police vehicles and ambulances. The riots were triggered by the death of 22-year-old woman Mahsa Amini days after she collapsed at a police station. Police have released CCTV footage of the incident. Tehran Police Commander Hossein Rahimi has rejected claims of physical violence against her. Officials say an investigation is underway into her death. Well, we've talked to political commentator Samati Torabi about the recent riots in Iran. He believes the U.S. incites rioters in an attempt to destabilize Iran.
The problem in Iran is that whenever these things happen, we end up with rioting. Because the goal of the Americans is to cause destabilization in Iran. So this is, I think, a big problem. The second issue, which I think is very important that we need to understand, is that the reality that is on the ground in Iran, in terms of understanding Iranian society, is very different than the thing that virtual reality that exists online. The reality is that in Iran, as we saw today with the rallies and the demonstrations that were going on, is that the vast majority of people in Iran are religious. They adhere to religious laws, to the laws of Islam, and they want the country to be governed according to Islam. The fact that they are not all on Twitter or on Instagram doesn't mean that that's not the reality of the society.
Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi says the United Nations should represent all countries, not big powers. Raisi was speaking with UN Chief Antonio Guterres on the sidelines of the General Assembly in New York. The Iranian president called on the world body to play a greater role in the face of unilateralism by some countries. He also said the ongoing crises in certain regional countries must be resolved through national dialogue and without foreign interference. Raisi said Guterres spoke about the 2015 Iran deal. As well, the UN chief said the U.S. withdrawal from the accord was an unconstructive move. The Iranian president also spoke about the accord in a press briefing held before his meeting with Guterres. Raisi said the ball is now in U.S. court in order for the accord to be revived.
We want guarantees from the U.S. due to its past behavior. Washington might suddenly withdraw from a deal that has been signed and refuse to comply with its obligations. This is what we have experienced before.
The Iranian president added his country wants the U.S. to remain committed to its obligations under a potential deal. Raisi also spoke about the 2020 assassination of top Iranian general Qasem Soleimani by the U.S. He called the killing state terrorism and described General Soleimani as a hero of the war on terror. The Iranian president held the briefing on Thursday, a day after he addressed the 77th summit of the UN General Assembly.
Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi gave his first speech at the United Nations General Assembly, filled with demands for multilateralism, justice, and peaceful logic. Following Iran's official admittance to the Shanghai Cooperation Organization last week, Raisi insisted that there is increasing progress towards cooperative internationalism and away from unilateralism. He decried the choice of capitalism over morality, saying such ideas have lost their legitimacy in public opinion. Raisi spoke of Iran's success in defeating the Daesh terrorist group, called for an end to Israel's 7 decades of ceaseless oppression against Palestinians, and demanded a fair trial and justice for the murderers of Iranian anti-terror hero General Qasem Soleimani in 2020. Raisi said the story of the Iranian nation is the story of a nation which stands on its own two feet. But the U.S. cannot accept this independence, which explains why, for Washington, Raisi said, militarism is its security. The Iranian president then continued with more top-level bilateral meetings and also met with a group of analysts, academics, and members of think tanks. No progress appears to have been made this week to restart the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or JCPOA, regarding Iran's nuclear energy program. Iranian negotiations this week with Europe were reportedly tense as, for years, Europe has failed to honestly implement their side of the agreement. Tehran has said that they are willing to revive the 2015 deal, but that Iran needs verifiable guarantees that Washington will not illegally and unilaterally withdraw from the accord again, as it did in May 2018. Ramin Mazahiri, New York City.
Iran's Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian accompanied President Raisi in his trip to New York. There, the top diplomat met his Norwegian counterpart, Anniken Huitfeldt. The two discussed several issues, including the JCPOA revival talks. Amir Abdullahian said an agreement is within reach if the United States shows goodwill. He also said the UN nuclear watchdog must distance itself from a double standard and politicized approach towards Iran's peaceful nuclear program. He said the IAEA should act within the scope of its technical duties. The Norwegian foreign minister, for her part, called for the conclusion of an agreement to revive the JCPOA. The two top diplomats also talked about expanding Tehran-Oslo cooperation. At least four people have been killed in an explosion that rocked the capital, Afghanistan. Medical sources say at least 10 others have been injured as well. Reports coming out of the country say the explosion happened near a mosque in central Kabul as people were streaming out from Friday prayers. Press TV has learned that the blast was caused by an IED bomb blast. So far, there has been no claim of responsibility, while overall violence has significantly dropped since the Taliban returned to power last year. Bomb attacks continue to target Kabul and other cities. Many of these attacks have been carried out by the Daesh terrorist group. Abdullah Amir Zadup is joining us now from the Afghan capital, Kabul, with all the latest on this recent explosion that took place in the capital of Afghanistan. Abdullah, over to you.
Yes, as you know, today at around 2 p.m., there was an explosion close to the exit door of a mosque in Wazir Akbar Khan district of Kabul. It is said that the worshippers were getting out of the mosque after the Friday prayer was finished, and there was a blast close to the exit door. The blast was caused by a magnetic mine, and it is said that four people have lost their lives and 10 people are injured. This is the number that the emergency hospital of Kabul has given. There is no official number, there is no official announcement about the casualties from the Taliban yet, but Khaled Zadran, the spokesman of the police of Kabul, he has announced in a Twitter message that all the casualties are civilians, and he also mentions that that they will give the number of the casualties later. Also, Zabihullah Mujahid, the spokesman of the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan, announced in a Twitter message that such attacks on worshippers and on mosques are unforgivable crimes. And also he mentioned that people should cooperate with the Taliban to actually eliminate such criminals and criminal acts. As of now, as you mentioned, no group has claimed the responsibility for this attack. But as you mentioned, these attacks on mosques and worshippers is rising. This is the fourth attack that occurred in last 50 days. As you remember, the last of them was in Herat. It was also a Friday prayer, and Maulavi Mujibullah Ansari, who is a very well-known clergyman. He lost his life along more than 10 other people.
All right, thanks a lot. That was our correspondent, Abdullah Mirzadeh, joining us from the Afghan capital, Kabul. Elsewhere, Europe is reeling from the fallout of tensions with Russia over the war in Ukraine. European markets slide over 2%, fueling fears of a possible recession in the region. Paris sank 2.2%, while Frankfurt tumbled by 2.4% in early afternoon trading. London also shed 2.1%. This says a new survey by S&P Global Market Intelligence shows European economic activity fell for the third straight month in September. Eurozone Purchasing Managers Index fell to 48.2, a score under 50 represents economic contraction. The figure for September has raised fears of recession further, as it was the steepest rate of decline in nearly a decade. Inflation in the Eurozone already hit an all-time high of 9.1% in August. The rate is predicted to rise to double digits by the year end, with soaring energy prices seen as the main culprit. In recent months, Britain has been hit by some of the biggest strike action in more than three decades, from the rail sector to postal services. Now the finance minister says the government will limit the right to strike to cases where negotiations have failed.
It is simply unacceptable. It is simply unacceptable that strike action is disrupting so many lives. Other European countries have minimum service levels to stop militant trade unions closing down transport networks during strikes. So we will do the same, and we will go further. We will legislate to require unions to put pay offers to a member vote to ensure that strikes can only be called once negotiations have genuinely broken down.
Tens of thousands of workers in different sectors have joined strikes across Britain during what is called a summer of discontent. Their main demand is this: a bigger pay increase so that they can cope with high inflation. Food and energy prices, among others, have been on the rise, deepening a cost of living crisis. UK inflation topped 10% in July, a rate unseen in 40 years. It's expected to go higher. Well, people in four Ukrainian regions are voting in referendums on joining Russia. The voting is taking place in Donetsk and Luhansk in the east, as well as Kherson and Zaporizhia in the south. Polls will close on Tuesday. The leader of the self-proclaimed Luhansk People's Republic says people there have been waiting for this referendum since 2014. Western leaders, however, have strongly criticized the referendums, calling them a sham. Ukraine has rejected them as well, calling the vote a farce. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov has condemned the accusations as an attempt to spread Russophobia. He says it's up to the residents of the four regions to decide if they want to be part of Russia. Australia's second largest telecommunications company, Optus, says personal information of almost 10 million of its customers have been taken.
I want to make it clear that that is the absolute worst case scenario. We have reason to believe that the number is actually smaller than that, but we are working through reconstructing exactly what the attackers have received. Importantly, it's a very small subset of data. It does not include any financial details. It does not include passwords. And so when we work through it, we will be identifying specifically which customers and which fields of data, and proactively contacting each individual customer with very clear explanations of which of their data has been exposed and potentially taken.
The attack is one of the biggest cybersecurity breaches in Australia. Optus has blamed an offshore-based entity for breaking into its database of customer information. Up to 40% of Australia's population may have been affected by the breach. Police and cybersecurity authorities have launched an investigation. Pakistan's former prime minister faces a contempt of court case that can potentially disqualify him from taking further part in politics. However, after expressing his willingness to offer an apology, the court has deferred its proceedings. Kamran Yusuf has the details.
Hundreds of police were deployed at Islamabad High Court on Thursday ahead of the likely indictment of Pakistan's former prime minister. Imran Khan is facing contempt of court charges for his public speech last month that was deemed as derogatory against a lady judge. The former Prime Minister had criticized the judge after one of his close aides was denied bail despite alleged police torture.
Suspense and speculation surrounded Khan's court proceedings over whether he would offer an apology or not. But at the outset of the proceedings, Khan came to the rostrum and offered an apology. After the announcement, his indictment was postponed by the High Court.
Khan Saab has explained himself today, and the court was very graceful. The court has allowed Imran Khan to submit an apology, and on this front, they have also allowed him to submit an affidavit regarding this. So I hope so. Things are going in very positive side.
Legal experts believe that Khan has potentially avoided a conviction and disqualification by offering this apology.
Well, he believes in rule of law. He believes in independence of judiciary. He's someone who has led a movement for restoration of judges in Pakistan.
Khan has been given reprieve just days before he is set to launch a fresh anti-government movement. The former Prime Minister was ousted from power in a vote of no confidence in April. Khan has repeatedly accused the US of plotting his dismissal. Since then, he has been addressing large public gatherings to push for early elections. The coalition government, however, is adamant to complete the term and hence the political standoff. Kamran Yusuf, Islamabad.
That's it with the world news for now. Bye, everybody.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Almost 2 years ago, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, in his opening speech at the climate summit, said, "World leaders must declare a climate emergency in their countries so that necessary measures can be taken to prevent catastrophic global warming." The UN Secretary General also stated that the world is not on a right track to limit the global warming to below 2 degrees Celsius or even 1.5 degrees Celsius. He said that countries can work together to completely reduce dependence on fossil fuels. Concerning this issue, we have taken a look at some world media for further details. Stay with us, please. The Common Dreams website said, as Pakistan and the United Nations recently asked the world for $160 million in response to catastrophic flooding in the country, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres also issued a broader warning about the human-caused climate emergency. Guterres said, "Let's stop sleepwalking toward the destruction of our planet by climate change," adding, "Today it's Pakistan, tomorrow it could be your country." Tens of millions of Pakistanis are contending with over 1,000 deaths and the widespread destruction of buildings and crops, the result of what Guterres called a monsoon on asteroids, the relentless impact of epochal levels of rain and flooding. He noted millions are homeless, schools and health facilities have been destroyed, livelihoods are shattered, critical infrastructure wiped out, and people's hopes and dreams have washed away, adding, every province of the country has been affected. Guterres said this colossal crisis requires urgent collective action to help the government and people of Pakistan in their hour of need. A long-time critic of rich nations' failures to adequately address fossil fuel-driven global heating, Guterres pointed out that South Asia is one of the world's global climate crisis hotspots. People living in these hotspots are 15 times more likely to die from climate impacts. The website of Morningstar Online explains more about the story, saying the United Nations said in a new report on Thursday, September 9th, with weather disasters costing $200 million a day and irreversible climate catastrophe looming, the world is heading in the wrong direction. The World Meteorological Organization, in the latest stark warning about global warming, said that weather-related disasters have increased fivefold over the last 50 years and are killing 115 per day on average, and the fallout is poised to worsen. The report, drawn from data compiled by several UN agencies and partners, cited a 48% chance that global temperatures compared to pre-industrial times will rise by 1.5 degrees Celsius in the next 5 years. There is a 93% chance that 1 year in the next five will see record heat. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said there is nothing natural about the new scale of these disasters. They are the price of humanity's fossil fuel addiction, adding, this year's United in Science report shows climate impacts heading into uncharted territories of destruction. He added, yet each year we double down on this fossil fuel addiction even as the symptoms get rapidly worse. The report comes amid fresh warnings from scientists recently that four climate tipping points will likely be triggered if that temperature threshold set in 2015 Paris Climate Accord is passed. The UN report says such losses and damages can be limited by timely action to prevent further warming and adapt to the temperature increases that are now inevitable. Questions around compensation for the damage that poor nations suffer as a result of emissions produced by rich countries will play a major role at the upcoming UN climate talks in Egypt this autumn. Asia Times Daily covers the same issue from a different angle, saying, did the Earth's climate just cross the Rubicon? It certainly feels that way given all the extreme weather events taking place. Europe recorded its hottest summer on record. California remains in an unprecedented climate emergency that may result in rolling electricity blackouts. We don't even know what challenges will take place in the Southern Hemisphere when summer sets in. The gravity of these climate-related events is having knock-on effects across societies around the world. From electricity generation to safe drinking water, extreme weather is forcing us to craft durable solutions for these problems. It's time to think outside of the box. In the arid climate of the Persian Gulf, access to drinking water is a climate-related challenge. This challenge has long been a scourge to the rapidly growing economies in the region. With ample access to seawater, Desalination efforts have been a tried and tested method of securing water supplies. In recent years, cloud seeding has exploded in popularity across West Asia. While the effectiveness of cloud seeding is still a matter of debate and some scientists are concerned about unforeseen complications, governments from Morocco to the UAE are investing heavily in cloud seeding programs to secure water resources. Ethiopia and Saudi Arabia have recently started large-scale cloud seeding operations. Since the technology was created in 1946, scientists have noted instances where cloud seeding decreases the number of clouds in the sky. Some scientists worry that cloud seeding can cause severe weather events like hail or floods by increasing rainfall in regions that are adept for such weather. Others have discredited this claim by arguing that cloud seeding can be suspended if there is a danger of flooding. Given the size of the climate crisis we are facing, efforts to improve novel technologies like cloud seeding will certainly help societies face serious problems. While it's important to be aware of how this technology and any other can be weaponized to achieve political goals, we can't let politics intervene in finding solutions to the climate crisis. It's a matter of life and death.
السلام على ابنك يا ابا عبد الله.
وانما خرجت لطلب الاصلاح في امه جدي صلى الله عليه واله.
The words of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam in dialogue.
صلى الله عليك يا ابا عبد الله.
Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, the son of the commander of the faithful Imam Ali, the son of the Lady of Light, the esteemed Fatima, the grandson of the holy Prophet Muhammad. Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, the beacon of light which guides towards patience and fortitude. The one who has eloquently said, "Be aware that all good works bear praise, and they bear commendation and bring about a good reward." Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, the master of martyrs, these are his dialogues.
Every clean soul and display.
Imam al-Hussein's words when addressing his companions at the outset of the battle. O honorable ones, rise up to the inevitable death. For the arrows are the envoys of the enemy to you. By Allah, there is nothing between you and paradise, and them and the fire, except death. Death takes you to your paradise gardens, and takes them to their hellfire.
As-salamu alayka ya. حلت بفنائي عليك مني.
Dear audience, now let's listen to some parts of Ziyara al-Nahiya al-Muqaddasa. Stay tuned.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام على الحسين الذي سمحت نفسه بمهجته
Peace be upon al-Husayn, who sacrificed himself up to the last drops of the blood of his heart.
السلام على من أطاع الله في سره وعلانيته
Peace be upon him who obeyed Allah secretly and openly.
As-salamu ala man ja'ala Allah ash-shifaa fi turbati.
Peace be upon whom Allah placed a cure in the soul of his place of martyrdom.
As-salamu ala man al-ijabatu tahta qubbati.
Peace be upon the one under whose dome answer to supplications is guaranteed.
السلام على من الأئمة من ذريتي
Peace be upon the one in whose descendants are the imams after him.
السلام على ابن خاتم الأنبياء السلام على ابن سيد الأوصياء
Peace be upon the son of the seal of the prophets. Peace be upon the son of the chief of the executors.
السلام على ابن فاطمة الزهراء السلام على ابن خديجة الكبرى
Peace be upon the son of Fatima, the radiant. Peace be upon the son of Khadija, the great.
السلام على ابن سدرة المنتهى السلام على ابن جنة المأوى السلام على ابن زمزم والصفا
Peace be upon the son of the low tree in the outermost boundary of heaven. Peace be upon the son of the garden of refuge. Peace be upon the son of Zamzam and As-Safa.
As-salamu ala al-murammal bid-dima. As-salamu ala al-mahduk al-khiba. As-salamu ala khamis ashab ahli al-kasaya.
Peace be upon him. Who was saturated in his blood. Peace be upon him whose tents were violated. Peace be upon the fifth of the people of the cloak.
And now let's listen to Dr. Muhammad Reza Fakhr Rouhani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim wa bin astain. Assalamu alaykum, Abu Abdullah. Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. On the day of Ashura, morning of Ashura, the two parties, were both ready. The party of Imam al-Hussein, the camp of Imam al-Hussein, was ready for defending the Islamic region and defending themselves. And the camp of the Umayyad forces got ready for initiating the war, waging a very severe war against Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. And then when Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam collected his companions, he addressed them not to be afraid of the arrows and not to be afraid of the sharpness of the swords, because since they were on the right track, they were going to join the paradise, the divine paradise. And then Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam addressed his companions in this way: "O honorable ones, rise up to the inevitable death, for the arrows are the envoys of the enemy to you. But Lord, this is nothing. There's nothing between you and paradise and the fire except death. Fire in the case of enemies of Imam al-Hussein son. For death takes them to paradise, to the paradise gardens, and them, that is the enemy soldiers, to the hellfire." You find that a conscientious leader, as Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, always encouraged his companions to remain steadfast because they were on the right track and they shouldn't be and remarks to them that they shouldn't be scared about the little number of the companions of Imam al-Hussein al-Salam, in contrast to a very high number of soldiers who had gathered on the Umayyad side. Now we find that all the efforts of Imam al-Hussein al-Salam was for the sake of maintaining peace, but such a kind of peace that it wasn't a peace that Yazid in Damascus intended to practicalize, intended to set up. Rather, it was a kind of peace such that Imam al-Hussein al-Salam was its director and its manager. Thank you.
As-salamu alayka ya Aba
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of the program Dialogue. We hope that you remain under the auspicious grace of Imam Hussein today and always. عليك مني سلام الله أبدا.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
toxic waste from America's war is destroying Iraqi communities. The U.S. owes them legally and morally, says Carly A. Caraco, writer, in an article published under the heading, The U.S. owes compensation to Iraqi burn pit victims, too. Stay tuned for more. On August 10th, United States President Joe Biden signed the PACT Act, aiding approximately 3.5 million American veterans with severe medical conditions linked to toxic exposure to burn pits during service, including in Iraq and Afghanistan. Open-air pits of military waste, sometimes as large as football fields, are burned to destroy munitions, chemicals, plastics, and medical and human waste, typically using jet fuel. Used widely until at least 2010, burn pits were still permitted at least as of last year, when waste management facilities were not available. Their impact, however, extends beyond the harm to those who were deployed and exposed to toxins in the short term. Fatal cancers, birth defects that can cause infant death or lifelong disabilities, malformations including a missing hand, cleft lip, and paralyzed club foot. An underdeveloped brain and incomplete skull. These are just some of the devastating conditions plaguing Iraqi civilians following the toxic exposure from the 2003 U.S. invasion and occupation and 1991 Persian Gulf War. How is this a fair price for civilians to pay for simply residing in their homes while the U.S. so-called war on terror forcibly exposed them to burn pits and depleted uranium? When will the U.S. fulfill international law obligations to compensate them for the toxic war zones that its military has left behind? Biden's signing recently was filled with fanfare and applause, and a moving appearance by the wife and young child of late Ohio veteran in whose honor the act is named, full title Sergeant First Class Heath Robinson, honoring promise to address comprehensive toxics or PACT Act. Indeed, the legislation is welcome. It covers numerous cancers and lung conditions and marks progress toward addressing dire suffering similar to that of Vietnam veterans who were unjustly neglected following Agent Orange exposure. In fact, the PACT Act addresses Agent Orange 47 years after that war's end. Biden said, "This is the least we can do for veterans." Where is equivalent acknowledgement and compensation for Iraqi civilians who have no escape from the kind of toxic surroundings the act aims to address for injured U.S. veterans? Many of those paying the highest price are Iraqi infants born 2 decades after the start of the so-called War on Terror. According to Dutch peace organization PAX, more than 780,000 rounds of depleted uranium were fired in 1991 and more than 300,000 rounds in 2003. Diseases linked to genetic damage in Fallujah, which was contaminated with depleted uranium munitions, have been documented at higher rates than in Hiroshima. The PACT Act provides presumptive conditions, benefits that remove the burden of proof. Instead, veterans will be presumed eligible according to dates and locations of service. Previously, nearly 4 in 5 burn pits connected Veterans Affairs claims were rejected. This same benefit of the doubt must be extended to Iraqis through a presumptive benefits-style program. The U.S. must not delay cleanup and compensation for decades, as with Vietnam. There is more than enough data to justify reparations. Petty and arguments can be used to fixate on documentation of the precise dates and nature of civilians' toxic exposure. Yet, there is ample evidence of what we call toxic saturation, the long-term, undeniable, accumulative encounters of Iraqi civilians with a variety of deadly toxins. As Iraqi novelist and poet Sinan Antun asks, do we breathe to live or do we breathe to die? The law is clear. Article 91 of Additional Protocol 1st to have the Geneva Convention says that violators of international humanitarian law are liable to pay compensation. The Environmental Modification Convention forbids military environmental modification techniques having widespread, long-lasting, or severe effects as the means of destruction, damage, or injury. There are abundant international regulations that are in conflict with U.S. actions regarding toxins. Article 55 of Additional Protocol 1 to the Geneva Conventions prohibits means of warfare that damage the environment and prejudice the health or survival of the population. The Rio Declaration calls for states to develop national law regarding liability and compensation for victims of environmental damage. Members of U.S. Congress were not connected with international law. However, when finally compensating veterans, they acted once they could not resist pressure any longer. U.S. leaders likely feared that compensation would admit U.S. culpability for Iraqi civilians' injuries. The harm caused, however, is obvious and must be remedied. Sadly, Washington's track record doesn't inspire optimism. The U.S. left Vietnam veterans in the cold before finally providing presumptive benefits and benefits for Agent Orange-linked birth defects in veterans' children. The U.S. Court of Appeals ruled against Vietnamese people who sought to hold Dow Chemical, Monsanto, and other companies accountable. The court justified this partly on the basis that dioxin was a defoliant to clear foliage, not intended to harm humans. The U.S. has spent roughly $400 million to address Agent Orange's environmental and health effects. USAID and Vietnam's government have a 10-year plan costing up to $500 million to clean Bien Hoa Airbase. A smaller amount, $14.5 million annually, was allocated for health and disability programs. If this numbers game seems a bit obscure, this is because there have been many parceled out allocations of funding, none of which have fully ameliorated harm to Vietnam's people. This becomes clearer when considered in relation to U.S. military budget of $735 billion. These precedents prove that U.S.-funded cleanups are possible even as they underscore the grossly inadequate nature of projects to address the horrific multi-generational effects of dioxin, cancer, and other crushing illnesses plague Vietnam survivors and their children. The bad news? History is not simply repeating. Conditions are worsening as new benchmarks are continually set for how bad things can get. As Vietnamese-American writer and professor Viet Thanh Nguyen writes, we can forgive the atrocities of the past, but the present is not yet finished. The present, perhaps, is always unforgivable. When the Senate finally passed the PACT Act, it was in spite of Republicans who refused to support it, which was seen as retaliation for Democratic legislation on climate and health care. This dysfunction regarding compensating veterans provides a glimpse into how antagonistic many lawmakers would be towards an Iraqi reparations proposal. The U.S. must take responsibility for toxins used by the military and by for-profit contractors. Yet abandoning civilians abroad is horrifically consistent with the U.S. approach to environmental racism domestically. Environmental injustice disproportionately impacts U.S. minority communities who often live in sacrifice zones. These realities make for an uphill struggle, though not an impossible one. The U.S. recognition of veterans while ignoring Iraqis reveal a segregated outlook on justice. The public needs to stand in solidarity with victims of the so-called war on terror. The U.S. government must expeditiously provide reparations to Iraqis and fulfill international law obligations. Anything less is environmental racism and a dangerously hierarchical approach to justice.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and IranSat or Bat 5 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program Hadith of the Day here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we're going to be looking at a very beautiful and noble hadith, which has been narrated from Imam Ali alayhi salam regarding God's pleasure, his ridwan. Imam Ali alayhi salam says, Allah's pleasure, ridallah, is linked to his obedience, maqrunun bita'atih. Allah's pleasure is linked to his obedience. You know, all of us want Allah to be pleased with them. You know, we want Allah to be happy with us, you know, in the end. And you know, that's our sole purpose for worshiping him, for obeying him, right? So, you know, people ask, what can we do that Allah is, you know, happy with us? What can we do that the Ahlul Bayt are happy with us? Right, so in this hadith, Imam Ali alayhi salam kind of elucidates and alludes to what we can do to make Allah happy and pleased with us. It's very simple, to obey his orders, to follow his edicts, and in this way we can attain his good pleasure. It's also been narrated in the Biharul Anwar, the very famous book of hadith, that the Prophet Musa alayhi salam addressed Allah saying, "My Lord, guide me to an action, the performance of which will earn me your good pleasure." You know, the Prophet Musa was, you know, he was famous for speaking to Allah a great deal. He used to speak to Allah a lot. That's why he is known as Kalimullah, the interlocutor, the one who speaks to God a great deal. So in this conversation that he had with God, the Prophet Moses asks God, what can he do that he can gain his good pleasure, God's pleasure, God will be pleased with him. So Allah revealed to him saying, "O son of Imran, verily my pleasure lies in that which you will be averse to, and you will not be able to endure it." So first God didn't tell him how he can gain his good pleasure. God told him that it lies in something that you cannot do, you will not be able to bear. When Moses heard this, he fell prostrate, weeping, and cried out, "My Lord, you have selected me to speak to when you have not spoken to anyone before me." You know, I'm the Kalimullah, I'm the one you speak to. This is a distinction that I solely have. At the same time, you are withholding something from me. You know, this makes me upset. And Moses was upset by this. He was crying. And, you know, he asked God to reveal this secret to him. Moses said, "And yet you do not guide me to that action by which I may earn your pleasure." Right? This is contradictory. Please resolve this contradiction. Tell me the secret. Well, how can I gain your good pleasure? So God replied to him and revealed to him the following. God said, and this is very tricky, God said, "Verily my pleasure lies in your pleasure with whatever I decree. When you are pleased," meaning when you are pleased with what I have decreed for you, "you will have attained my pleasure and I will be pleased with you as well." Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at God's good pleasure in the words of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.